Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. And today we're going to be looking at 1 Kings 9 and 10, the rise and fall of Solomon. Okay. And we're using a really interesting lecture by Dr. John Oswalt to as the kind of basis for our deep dive. You might think you know the story of Solomon, you know, wise king, all the riches, the Queen of Sheba, all that stuff.
Okay.
But Dr. Oswalt points out that there's a little bit of a cautionary tale lurking beneath the surface. He compares Solomon's early reign, which is full of God's favor, to his later years where things start to take a turn.
Yeah. What's fascinating is that he points out the contrast between the two appearances of God to Solomon.
Yeah.
So you have the first one in 1 Kings 3, where God promises him wisdom, riches, long life. But then in chapter 9, after the temple has been built, God appears again, and it's the tone has shifted. It's no longer this outpouring of unconditional blessing. It's very much conditional, almost like a warning.
So like what changes in chapter 9? What does God require Solomon to kind of keep those blessings flowing?
Well, God lays out some very specific conditions for Solomon and for the Davidic dynasty as a whole. And the most crucial one is walking before God with a whole heart.
Uh-huh.
And Dr. Oswalt really dives into what that means. The Hebrew word is tom. And he explains that it goes beyond just outward obedience to the law.
Right. It's about a complete and total dedication to God. Right.
Exactly. It's like the sacrificial lamb, perfect, pure, without blemish. Mm-hmm. God wants all of Solomon, not just his actions. And here's the thing. Oswalt suggests that disobedience is actually a form of idolatry. When you turn away from God's commands, you inevitably turn towards something else to fill that void.
Wow. No, that's a powerful thought. It makes you wonder, you know, what other gods are we tempted to turn towards today?
Yeah.
You know, is it our careers, our possessions, you know, our own comfort? Like one of those things that are subtly vying for our attention and affection that pull us away from God.
Yeah. It's a question we all need to wrestle with.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at Solomon's actions in the rest of chapter 9, verses 10 through 28, on the surface, they just seem kind of random. You know, he pays off King Hiram with some Israelite land. He relies on forced labor. He's focused on all these massive building projects and, you know, entering into this lucrative shipping partnership. But Oswalt suggests that these actions reveal a subtle but significant shift in Solomon's priorities.
It's almost like he's starting to behave like any other, you know, worldly king, despite being set apart by God. It's interesting because the chapter opens by saying that Solomon accomplished, you know, what he wanted to do.
Right.
But, you know, at this point, were his desires truly aligned with God's desires?
That's a really crucial question. And it leads us to one of the most fascinating parts of this story, the visit of the Queen of Sheba.
Oh, yeah, the Queen of Sheba. She travels all the way to Jerusalem, and she's totally blown away by Solomon's wisdom and his wealth, right?
Exactly. And what's striking is that she, this pagan queen, immediately recognizes the true source of Solomon's success. And she says to him, "Praise be to Yahweh, your God, who has delighted in you and placed you on the throne of Israel." She sees what Solomon seems to be missing. Yahweh is the power behind it all.
Yeah, that's a powerful observation. It really highlights the irony of the situation. Even a pagan queen can see that Yahweh is the true source of Solomon's blessings. But Solomon himself is kind of losing sight of that. And then as we move into chapter 10, we get this like almost overwhelming description of Solomon's wealth. It's like the blessings keep flowing despite this shift in his priorities.
Yeah, and that's where Oswalt shares this anecdote about a gifted preacher who, despite continued blessings, falls into a pattern of sin. It's a reminder that just because things are going well in our lives, it doesn't necessarily mean we're in the clear spiritually.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious about that preacher anecdote. What specific sin did he fall into despite these continued blessings? Was it something like dramatic or more of a slow fade?
Yeah, he doesn't go into specifics, but the point he's making is that we can't mistake God's grace for a free pass to do whatever we want. God's blessings are not always a direct reflection of our spiritual state. And this leads us to one of the most crucial parts of his lecture, which is the comparison between Solomon's actions and the guidelines for kings laid out in Deuteronomy 17.
Ah, Deuteronomy 17. It's almost like God gave kings a specific instruction manual.
Yeah.
What were some of those key guidelines?
Well, Deuteronomy 17 specifically warns kings against three things: accumulating too many horses, taking many wives, and amassing excessive wealth. And these weren't just random rules. They were meant to safeguard the king's heart and keep him dependent on God. Too many horses could lead to military might and a sense of self-reliance. Many wives could lead to divided loyalties and the influence of foreign gods. And excessive wealth, well, they could easily lead to pride and a disconnect from the needs of the people.
Right. Makes sense. So how does Solomon measure up against these guidelines?
He breaks them all. He accumulates vast numbers of horses. He takes hundreds of wives and concubines and amasses an enormous fortune. It's a stark contrast to the humble beginnings of his reign, where he asked God for wisdom above all else.
It's almost ironic. Solomon, the man renowned for his wisdom, ends up disregarding God's explicit instructions. You have to wonder what led him down this path. Was it pride, complacency, the seductive nature of power?
That's what we'll explore in the next part of our deep dive. We'll dig deeper into Solomon's gradual drift away from God and unpack the deeper implications of his choices.
So we're left with this image of Solomon. This guy blessed with incredible wisdom, but he's seemingly blind to his own drift from God. It's pretty cautionary tale for all of us, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And what I find so fascinating about Oswald's analysis is that he doesn't paint Solomon as like this outright villain. It's a lot more nuanced than that. You know, he highlights this gradual nature of Solomon's disobedience, almost like a slow fade into the background noise of all that worldly success.
Yeah, that slow fade idea. That's really intriguing. Do you think that's how it happens for most of us? We don't necessarily make a conscious decision to just like abandon God. We just kind of drift away little by little.
Yeah, I think that's a really insightful observation. I mean, it's rarely this dramatic overnight shift, mm-hmm. right? It's more about those small compromises that we make, these subtle shifts in priorities, until one day, boom, we wake up and realize, whoa, we're miles away from where we started. Think about those guidelines from Deuteronomy 17. Solomon probably didn't wake up one morning and say, you know what, I'm going to go get hundreds of horses and wives today.
Yeah.
It probably started with a few extra horses here, a strategic marriage alliance there.
Yeah. It's like that saying, sin will take you farther than you want to go, keep you longer than you want to stay, and cost you more than you want to pay, right?
Exactly.
He probably didn't foresee the full consequences of his actions when he started down that road. And this whole idea of a slow fade makes me think about another point that Oswald made. The connection between disobedience and idolatry. He uses this really vivid image of flirting with other gods.
Yeah, I love that image. It really captures that kind of seductive nature of idolatry, doesn't it? I mean, it's not always this blatant in-your-face rejection of God.
Right.
It can be super subtle, almost unintentional.
Yeah.
You know, we start to prioritize other things, our careers, positions, comfort, and they slowly take on this kind of God-like status in our lives.
Yeah, we become so focused on those things, so consumed with acquiring them that they start to control our thoughts, our emotions, our actions.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, bam, we've replaced God with something far less worthy of our worship.
Exactly. It's like we've created these golden calves in our own lives,
right.
Just like the Israelites did in the wilderness.
Yeah. And that's the danger of that continued blessing we talked about earlier, right? It can create this false sense of security, almost like we're entitled to God's favor regardless of our actions. Like we start to believe that our success is solely our own doing and forget that every good and perfect gift comes from God.
That's so true. It's a very humbling thought.
It is. It makes you wonder, what idols are we flirting with in our own lives without even realizing it? What are those things that are subtly vying for our attention and our time and our resources and ultimately pulling us away from this wholehearted devotion to God?
Yeah, those are tough questions.
They are.
But they're questions that I think we all need to be asking ourselves honestly. And maybe, just maybe, the Queen of Sheba's observation can give us a little bit of a clue.
Oh, you mean how she immediately recognized Yahweh as the source of all of Solomon's success?
Exactly. She had that outsider's perspective. You know, she wasn't caught up in the trappings of Solomon's court, so she could see things much more clearly. And I think sometimes we need that outside perspective, that voice of truth, to help us see our own blind spots.
So how do we get that outside perspective? Do we all need a Queen of Sheba in our lives?
Well, it doesn't have to be a queen.
Mm-hmm.
But it does require us to surround ourselves with people who will speak truth to us, people who can gently point out when we're drifting off course, people who will challenge our assumptions and hold us accountable. It's about cultivating authentic relationships within a community that's committed to pursuing God together.
I think that makes a lot of sense. We need those people in our lives who love us enough to tell us the hard truths, even when we don't want to hear them.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings us back to Solomon's story. He had advisors, he had prophets, he even had his own mother, Bathsheba, who tried to guide him.
Right.
But somewhere along the way, he just stopped listening.
And that's the tragedy of it all. He had wisdom, but he didn't always choose to act on it. He allowed himself to be swayed by his own desires, by the allure of power and wealth, and ultimately he paid the price. You know, his kingdom was divided after his death, and the glory of his reign faded.
It's a stark reminder that even the wisest among us are vulnerable to temptation and disobedience. And we can't rely on our own strength or wisdom to stay on the right path.
Right.
We need something more.
We need the grace of God. And Oswald reminds us that even when we stumble, even when we make foolish choices, God's love and mercy are always available to us.
Yeah. It's like that beautiful passage in Lamentations. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. For his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness.
So good.
It's such a comforting thought. No matter how far we stray, no matter how badly we mess up, God is always there to welcome us back, to forgive us, to restore us.
That's the beauty of the gospel message, isn't it? It's not about earning our way to God.
Right.
It's about receiving his unconditional love and forgiveness. It's about recognizing that our righteousness comes not from our own efforts, but from the sacrifice of Jesus Christ on our behalf.
So if we can't earn God's favor, if it's freely given to us through Christ, does that mean we can just live however we want? Are there no consequences for our choices?
I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
While we are free from the condemnation of the law through Christ, our choices still have consequences.
Mm.
We may experience pain, loss, broken relationships as a result of our disobedience. But even in those consequences, God's grace is at work, drawing us closer to him, refining our character, teaching us valuable lessons.
So it's not about avoiding consequences altogether. It's about learning and growing through them with God's help.
Exactly.
Which brings us back to that Queen of Sheba observation. Has she immediately recognized Yahweh as the source of Solomon's success?
Right.
It's almost like she had a clearer understanding of God's role in Solomon's life than Solomon did.
Yeah. It's really profound. It highlights the danger of misattributing the source of our blessings. You know, we can easily fall into the trap of thinking, well, I'm successful because of my hard work, my talent, my intelligence. We forget that every good and perfect gift comes from God.
Right. It's a very subtle form of pride, isn't it? We start to believe that we're in control, that our achievements are solely our own doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that can lead to a very dangerous sense of self-reliance, a disconnect from the very source of our strength and provision.
Exactly. And that's why it's so crucial to cultivate a heart of humility.
Right.
A recognition that we are utterly dependent on God for everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's about acknowledging his sovereignty, his power, and his goodness in every aspect of our lives.
So how do we cultivate that kind of humility? It seems like it would require this constant shift in perspective, a willingness to let go of our ego and embrace a posture of dependence on God.
Yeah, it's a daily practice, a continual surrender. Mm-hmm. You know, it starts with acknowledging our need for God, for his wisdom, his guidance, and his strength.
Mm-hmm.
It's about praying for his help, seeking his will in our decisions, giving him the glory for every success, every breakthrough, every blessing in our lives.
And that leads to gratitude, right?
Yeah.
When we recognize God as the giver of all good things, our hearts just naturally overflow with thankfulness.
Yeah.
We no longer feel entitled or demanding. We become filled with a sense of awe and appreciation for his undeserved favor.
Yeah, gratitude is a powerful antidote to pride.
Yeah.
It shifts our focus away from ourselves and onto God.
Right.
And it fuels a desire to live in obedience to him, not out of a sense of obligation, but out of a heart that's filled with love and thankfulness.
So it's like this beautiful cycle, isn't it? Humility leads to gratitude. Gratitude leads to obedience. And obedience leads to a life that's truly aligned with God's heart and purpose.
It's the path to true fulfillment, to that abundant life that Jesus promised. And it's a path that's open to all of us, no matter what our past mistakes or present struggles may be.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Solomon's rise and fall, I think the challenge for all of us is this. Are we willing to let go of our self-reliance and embrace this posture of humility before God? Are we willing to acknowledge him as the source of all our blessings and live lives of gratitude and obedience?
That's the question we'll explore in the final part of our deep dive. We'll unpack the implications of Solomon's choices and discover how his story can challenge and inspire us to live lives that are fully surrendered to God.
Okay, so here we are, like at the heart of it all. We've talked about Solomon's rise, his wisdom, like his incredible success, and then that, you know, that gradual drift away from the path God had set before him.
Right.
It's a powerful reminder, right, that none of us are immune to temptation, no matter how blessed or how wise we might think we are.
It's easy to look back at Solomon's story and think, man, how could he have been so foolish? Like, how could he have thrown away all that God had given him? But I wonder, have you ever found yourself in a similar situation? Maybe not on the scale of a king, but in your own life.
Yeah. I mean, those moments when, like, we know what's right, but we choose a different path. Mm. You know, when we let those other gods kind of sneak in and steal our focus.
Mm.
I think we've all been there at some point.
Absolutely. And that's why I think Solomon's story is so relevant for us today. It's not just some ancient history lesson, you know. It's a mirror reflecting our own vulnerabilities, our own struggles with temptation and obedience.
It's a bit unsettling, to be honest. If someone like Solomon, with all his wisdom and divine favor, could stumble so dramatically, what hope is there for the rest of us?
That's where the grace of God comes in. You see, Solomon's story isn't ultimately a story of failure. It's a story of God's relentless love and mercy. Even when we mess up, even when we make choices that break God's heart, he's always there, ready to forgive us and to restore us and to set us back on the right path.
It's so easy to get caught up in the guilt and shame of our mistakes and feel like, I've blown it, like beyond repair. But God's grace is bigger than all of that. It's like a lifeline that pulls us out of the depths of our own failings and offers us a fresh start.
And that's the beauty of that gospel message, right? Yeah. It's not about earning our way to God. It's about receiving his unconditional love and forgiveness. It's about recognizing that our righteousness comes not from our own efforts, but from the sacrifice of Jesus Christ on our behalf.
So if we can't earn God's favor, if it's freely given to us through Christ, does that mean we can just live however we want? Like, are there no consequences for our choices?
Not exactly. While we are free from the condemnation of the law through Christ, our choices still have consequences. We may experience pain, loss, broken relationships as a result of our disobedience. But even in those consequences, God's grace is at work, drawing us closer to him, refining our character, teaching us valuable lessons.
So it's not about avoiding consequences altogether. It's about learning and growing through them with God's help.
Exactly.
Which brings us back to the Queen of Sheba's observation, how she immediately recognized Yahweh as the source of Solomon's success. It's almost like she had a clearer understanding of God's role in Solomon's life than Solomon did.
It really highlights the danger of misattributing the source of our blessings. Like, we can easily fall into the trap of thinking, I'm successful because of my hard work, my talent, my intelligence.
Right, right.
We forget that every good and perfect gift comes from God.
It's a subtle form of pride, isn't it? We start to believe that we're in control, that our achievements are solely our own doing, and that can lead to this really dangerous sense of self-reliance, a disconnect from the very source of our strength and provision.
Exactly. And that's why it's so crucial to cultivate a heart of humility,
right?
A recognition that we are utterly dependent on God for everything. It's about acknowledging his sovereignty, his power, and his goodness in every aspect of our lives.
So how do we cultivate that kind of humility? It seems like it would require this constant shift in perspective, a willingness to, like, let go of our ego and embrace a posture of dependence on God.
Yeah, it's a daily practice, a continual surrender. It starts with acknowledging our need for God, for his wisdom, his guidance, and his strength. It's about praying for his help, seeking his will in our decisions, giving him the glory for every success, every breakthrough, every blessing in our lives.
And that leads to gratitude, doesn't it? When we recognize God as the giver of all good things, our hearts just naturally overflow with thankfulness. We no longer feel entitled or demanding. We become filled with a sense of awe and appreciation for his undeserved favor.
Yeah. Gratitude's a powerful antidote to pride.
Totally.
It shifts our focus away from ourselves and onto God, and it fuels the desire to live in obedience to him, not out of a sense of obligation, but out of a heart filled with love and thankfulness.
So it's like this beautiful cycle. Humility leads to gratitude. Gratitude leads to obedience. And obedience leads to a life that's truly aligned with God's heart and purpose.
It's the path to true fulfillment, to that abundant life that Jesus promised. And it's a path that's open to all of us, no matter our past mistakes or present struggles.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Solomon's rise and fall, I think the challenge for all of us is this. Are we willing to let go of our self-reliance and embrace a posture of humility before God? Are we willing to acknowledge him as the source of all our blessings and live lives of gratitude and obedience?
The choice is ours. We can choose to chase after the fleeting things of this world, like Solomon did, and ultimately find ourselves empty and unfulfilled. Or we can choose to pursue a relationship with God, to seek his will above all else, and experience the true and lasting joy that only he can offer.
That's it for this deep dive. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.